I'm Christopher Light, and this is The Connection. You've surely noticed it in your own office. The rules have changed. In this new technological environment and the competitive world around it, you had better have a few geeks on your staff, and you'd better be learning to get along with those pasty-faced propeller heads that you probably avoided when you were in high school. To geeks, writes our guest John Katz, subjects like nanotechnology are like sports for other people. So as sure as the Dow Jones average is slipping and the NASDAQ is still climbing, as sure as you're going to need somebody to reboot your crashed computer or to save your corporate LAN or large area network, we are all living now through the geek moment in human history. After the Columbine shootings last spring, the graffiti on a wooden fence in Kalamazoo, Michigan said, "It's about jocks picking on geeks." But in so many other ways, geeks are having their revenge. John Katz, who manages to stay several dimensions ahead in the game of observing America, has now written a love story about the geek ascendancy. He's been asking for a long time for emails in which geeks describe themselves. He's also been watching two young geeks in particular in their passage out of awkward teenitude into techno manhood. And he's written a beautiful book about it. It's called Geeks, How Two Lost Boys Rode the Internet Out of Idaho. Our phone is 1-800-423-8255 to make the geek connection this hour. Connection geeks, and we know you're out there. Is there a new geek understanding? And have the geeks inherited the earth? 1-800-423-8255. Makes the connection. And welcome back, John Katz. I don't know how you do it, but you're always on the edge, man.
I keep moving.
Define geeks. I mean, you might begin by, what's the difference between a geek and a nerd, say?
Well, you know, it's funny. When I was a kid, I was called a geek. I'm not a geek. I'm a little too old, and I don't have the technical skills.
You want to be a geek now?
I don't know. I like observing them, you know. I don't know that I could be a geek or even would want to be one, but...
Are you smart? Are any of us smart enough to be a geek?
I think it helps if you're 17 or 18 and if you really have that hand-eye coordination and programming skills that I do not have. But I think it's a fascinating culture. At the moment, I think it's the hottest, most interesting subculture on the planet. We used to be called projector kids, audiovisual AV kids. The culture is loaded with terms to denigrate people who are smart and different and interesting.
I like that, projector kids.
Okay. I was a projector kid, and now I think a few years ago it was AV kids. And then came the net. And being an AV kid was not a particularly important thing to be, or being a projector kid. But building the net, building the web is a very important thing to be. I think these kids are amazing. They are the only people who really understand how the world is working right now. And everybody needs them. Everybody's fascinated by them. And this is a sort of outsider culture, never had much status, which is now probably the hottest culture in the world. And geek chic is all over New York. It's a term in Madison Avenue. I never thought I'd ever hear the term geek chic. Now, you can't generalize about them. There's all different kinds of geeks. I was really interested in the sort of streak of the culture that, you know, had a rough time in school, was alienated. This the key to talking about this great and amazing culture is that it has grown up and evolved outside of the understanding of all the institutions in society responsible for that sort of thing, education, media, politics, and business. All of a sudden, they've just ascended. And they've done it on their own. They've built the infrastructure of the net and the web.
Color them in a little bit in terms of what they wear. What's their music? What do they read?
Well, I mean, they see The Matrix. They love the sort of bitter outsider humor. They probably do a lot of programming and code. I don't think they're deeply into hardcover books. They're very detached from the political system. They love music. They love pop culture. I think they're a bit disconnected from the sort of irrational kind of combative political system. And remember, this is not a group that has done well generally in school. Schools don't value what they do. I hear from geek kids all the time that if you put on a helmet and you run down a field and you plow into somebody at 100 miles an hour, you're a hero. But if you are programming or gaming or doing these very sophisticated, complex, and rich things, then you're a nerd or a freak or a geek. And I think they're reinventing culture. I think they're going to change life in many, many ways.
I'm fascinated in this book. You have pages scattered throughout of self-definitions by geeks that you've invited to describe themselves. Brian writes, "I have a fair amount of war wounds from suits. I used to work at a bank. Geekdom, at least for me, is not something I usually think about, and is only incidental to a far larger, more important thing. He says, I am, first and foremost, unequivocally, an individual. I want my gravestone to read, thinker, creator, lover, freak.
That's right. There's a pride about being different.
Go for it.
No, I love those messages. I did something interesting, I think, in the book in terms of the writing of it. I tried to use email. I mean, it's a narrative, of course, but I tried to use whenever a character was being explained, especially Jesse and Eric, about whom the book centers, I used email to let them explain themselves rather than have me describe them. So Jesse is able in the book.
Let's introduce Jesse, but I also, and let Jesse introduce David Copperfield.
Right. Well, Jesse, when I encountered him, I had written a series on the website Hotwired called The Rise of the Geeks, which is the first time I had this idea. This is one of the reasons you mentioned my range of subjects. The net is just keeps me alive as a writer because so much information sort of flows in. I think it's just miraculous for people who...
You were into email before it was fashionable. Are you talking about that still, or
well, the whole thing, the whole culture of interactivity, the dialogue that goes on, people flaming you and blasting you and praising you and challenging you, is just very exciting to me. It keeps me, my mind, I think it keeps the hinges from rustling in my mind. It's a great gift to me as a writer. When I started exploring this idea, I really wanted to do it in an interactive way, as is appropriate for geeks. And I put it on the web. I said, I have this idea that the geeks are rising, this outside of culture, this brilliant, idiosyncratic, ferociously individualistic culture is ascending. I could feel it.
Hmm.
Is this true? And I got thousands and thousands of emails from all over the world. I still get them. An explosion, really. One of them, you know, and I have, you and I talked about this before, I have this idea that there is a spiritual dimension to email. I don't mean this in a religious sense, but if you get enough of it, if you really pay attention to it, every now and then a message will come out of the ether and just smack you right in the head. And I got a message like that from a kid named Jesse Daly, who identified himself as a member of the Middleton, Idaho High School Geek Club, which I thought was quite shocking. Mm. And I asked him at one point in this interchange, can you tell me, would you describe your life? We talked about, would you describe your life as having been painful? And he emailed me back. He said, I don't know how to answer. I don't have the words. The best answer is for you to go to chapter 16 of David Copperfield. You'll know the part when you see it. That's how I feel about myself. I can't say it any better.
Oof.
And I did go to David Copperfield, and I did find it. And I'll just read one line of it.
This is so touching, really.
And I knew he was right. I knew exactly. And this line that said, it seemed to me so long, however.
Read the whole thing.
Oh, the whole
it's
thing.
Important.
Okay, good.
Charles Dickens is an approved writer on The Connection.
What I really love about your program is you guys read the books, which is really great. If you're going
to notice, Mary McGrath and I turned down the same pages.
I know it. It's a great and rare experience. It seemed to me so long, however.
This is Dickens writing.
Dickens.
David Copperfield.
And by the way, this is Jesse as a kid. I said, where did you get into David Copperfield? And he said he came across them on the internet. He was just trawling around looking for. He came across the Dickens website and he read. He came across this quote online. Then went out and got the book. I found the minute I riffed through the book, I came across the passage. I said, this has got to be the one. He said, yes, you got the one. It seemed to me so long, however, since I had been among such boys, or among any companions of my own age, that I felt as strange as ever I have done in all my life. I was so conscious of having passed through scenes of which they could have had no knowledge, and of having acquired experiences foreign to my age, appearance, and condition as one of them, that I half believed it was an imposture to come there as an ordinary little schoolboy. I had become so unused to the sports and games of boys that I knew I was awkward and inexperienced in the commonest things belonging to them. Whatever I had learnt had so slipped away from me in the sordid cares of my life from day to night that now, when I was examined about what I knew nothing. Well, when I read this, I was on pretty much the next plane to Idaho, and I ended up in this shockingly dreary, Mormon, poor Agritown in the southwestern corner. This is not the Idaho that the swells go to ski. This is the other Idaho. And this is probably the worst place on earth for a brilliant nonconformist kid like Jesse to be. He had introduced himself to me as the town's Mormon taunter. That was his self-description. And he was a nonconformist. He had been essentially on his own since he was 4 or 5. His families had fallen apart. He had places to live, but no parents really involved in his life. His father was dying of Parkinson's disease, or very ill from it, and his mother was in a different state. And he was working in a sort of dead end computer job in a little computer shop in this town. We connected in a sort of very powerful way immediately, partially because I guess I saw something of me in him when I was a kid, partially because he was so astonishingly bright. We were up for days arguing about Bill Gates, the internet, whatever. And I mentioned him in passing. I said, you know, Jesse, and he said how dispiriting life in this town was for him, how tough it was to be there. And I said, well, you're a geek. You can go any place you want. You can get a job any place. And he didn't say anything, but when I left, and this was part of a Rolling Stone piece that was the initial impetus for going there. He went online immediately and started going through newspaper job sites, classified ads. He didn't want to go to a yuppie city. He didn't want to go to Boston. He didn't want to go to Seattle. He didn't want to go to Austin because the yuppies had been sort of torturing him his whole life. He said, I'm not about to move halfway across the country just to take stuff from people wearing $100 shoes. That was his. So Chicago, he fixated on right away. 650 jobs on that website for computer people. So he online... rents an apartment, gets a couple of jobs lined up. And, of course, there are limits to doing this on the Internet, since the apartment he rented turned out actually to be north of Gary, Indiana, closer than it was to Chicago. At this point, I was leaving. We were up all night talking. He had gone to the only party he had ever been invited to in his life and made what he called his last stab at social acceptance in the town, which was to go after this girl he had been in love with for years, and he was rejected. And he was really...
Oh, we got that clear. Okay.
He was crushed. He was just crushed. And he was in his apartment, which basically was a computer and some rotting food. And I said to myself, it was a very powerful thing for me. You know, the journalistic rules are you never affect the outcome of a piece. You never, you know, what has to happen has to happen. A lot of people have criticized me for this journalistically, saying, well, I should have just... I call it the laboratory rat philosophy. You basically should step back and see whether he sinks or swims, which is, of course, the journalistic thing to do. But I just, this bomb went off in my head. I love this kid from the minute. I loved his brand. I love his independence. I love what he knew about the net, the gaming, all the stuff. He said at one point, he said, Katz, you never had an online kill. You never had a gaming kill. And this was a barrier in our relationship. I'd never killed anyone in a game. So he sort of set my preferences so I could kill someone on Quake, which I did. and we bonded. And I said, in my mind, I just...
Real bond. Go ahead.
We really did a bonding moment because he was horrified. You never killed anyone online. And, of course, whenever I tried to do it, I would get massacred in like 4 seconds. I mean, if you're not 15, you don't have the motor skills for that. By the way, I was amazed at the complexity, the richness, the challenge. These games are much more intellectually challenging than chess, you know, on many, many levels, in many, many, many ways, although they're demonized. But I had this bomb went off. I said, this kid is not going to fall between the cracks. This kid must not fall between the cracks. And I just kept going over and over in my head. I just could not live with myself if that happened to him. He was so original. He was so interesting. He was so honest and brave. So he sets off across the country in a Ryder truck with $10 to spare and heads for Chicago and lands in this apartment. And which is an hour and a half from the city, taking a train. And then I fly out there to sort of be with him and go with him on his first job interview, which was essentially a long discussion between he and I about whether he should wear a tie or not, because he thought that was a non-geeky thing to do. He wasn't going to take a job where he had to wear a tie. The train stops at the University of Chicago at Hyde Park, and Jesse looks around, and all these kids get on from the university who are precisely what he was nervous about. A lot of $100 shoes, berets, books of poetry.
Even at Chicago. Okay.
Even at Chicago. Although one was carrying a Dickens volume. And I turned to him, and I said, do you ever think of going to college? And he said, you know, Katz, he said, back in Idaho, he said, I knew a kid who went to college, and his parents paid the whole thing, just like that. He snapped his fingers. He said, but that's never in the cards for me. And so I arranged for him to go down and meet a friend I knew who was at the university. And he called me up, and it's the only thing he ever asked me for. He said, Katz, I need to go there. And I said, Jesse, this is like one of the toughest schools in America to go into. You, like, barely got through high school. Every teacher in the place would kill you for a nickel. You know, this is the tough thing. And it was June, no less. But we launched this campaign, and he wrote these very, very powerful essays, which I urged him to do because it was a way of explaining his academic life and his background. And I flew out and met with the dean of admissions, which was a great cultural happening. I said to the dean, you know, I'm here to talk about geeks. And the dean looked at me sort of strangely, and he said, yes, he said, I should go on the Internet once. I should really experience that. And I knew this was kind of trouble, but he agreed to meet Jesse. Jesse came in 3 weeks later, called me up, and I said, how was it? He said, oh, it was great. We had a huge fight. And I said, you had a huge fight? He said, yeah. He said, he was really full of it. He said, we had a fight about free will versus reason. And I told him there's no such thing as free will. Free will is about genetic predetermination and biology and science. It's about genes. Free will is really bull. And you really don't know what you're talking about. This, by the way, was the head of the humanities department. And they had like a whole hour and a half. All they did is brawl about this issue of free will versus reason. And I said, well, that's great, Jesse. That's good. I said, so what's the last thing the dean said to you? And he said to you, I don't like your ideas, and I don't agree with you. He said, but I would like to have you in my class, I got to say. And 2 weeks later, he got admitted. And it was amazing. It was great. So and all of this had been done out of his geekness. That's why I came to him. That's how he reached out to me. That's why he was appealing to me for the Rolling Stone piece, for the book, to the University of Chicago. This idea of geekness, and the dean, I could see how fascinated the dean was by this. The dean sensed that this is a person who was part of an important culture that he needed to connect with and the school needed to connect with, which rarely happens, I think.
And on the sort of know them before you need them principal, John Katz, you've got your geek now. When he takes over the world, you can say, Jesse?
Yes. Well, I was just with him in Chicago. I was with him for 2 or 3 days. It was very powerful.
How does he like school, and what's the bonding with sort of
he's at the right
old
school.
Culture?
He's at the right school. The University of Chicago is sort of a community of geeks, and it's I don't mean necessarily computer geeks, but there are a lot of individualists there, and they pride themselves on being free thinkers. He's having the time of his life tormenting professors, arguing his various theories of in nanotechnology and the many things he's into.
Is he happy?
He's got a girlfriend who I met.
I was going to say.
He's got a girlfriend. He's got a bunch. I have to tell you, it's a very powerful moment for me because when I saw this kid, he was hunched over. He was pale. He was living in this incredible rat hole in this awful town. He was dispirited. His posture, everything about him, he could hardly speak. I mean, we could hardly have a conversation. In order to speak to him, I had to stand behind him while he was at the computer, and he would talk to me over his shoulder because he was so uncomfortable with that kind of conversation. And to see him so happy there, with a bunch of great friends, and this gorgeous day was good. It was a nice feeling.
He's not going to get over geekdom, geekitude, I hope.
Not at all. He is ferociously geek-minded. He is gaming and programming, and he has this sort of. One of the things that's amazing about these kids is because schools don't value what they do. You know, there's all this demonizing about the net. If you're online a lot, you're a freak, or you're obsessive, or you're addicted, or you're dangerous. There's like a net phobia of the week. You know, one week it's that. You're promoting isolation and dislocation. The next week, it's you're addicted. I came across something in the paper this morning about cyber sex compulsives. Everybody's getting sex addicted online. I mean, you have these two cultures. I mean, I had this idea of journalism as, in our time, like temperance ladies in a bar, you know. Journalists are running around every week clucking and shrieking, oh, my God, the world is changing. Look how dangerous it is. These kids have sort of, you know, been forced underground and are almost in a parallel nation. They're developing away from teachers, away from – nobody knows what they're doing. So they have this amazing mix-max of individualism and ideas. And as Jesse says, you know, anybody can be on a computer, but not everybody is a geek. I think at the core, a geek is about being a little bit on the outside, about being independent-minded, about being having a sort of kind of ironic humor, about being fiercely open-minded, about challenging people like me, people like you, people like all the time to think more clearly and think differently and expand. And they love technology. They are using technology to sort of rewrite the world.
It's 1-800-423-8255 makes the geek connection with John Katz, who's done it again. He's sort of he's laid his claim to a new piece of evolving America, and we're trying to catch up. 1-800-423-TALK, the geek connection. Mia is on the line.
Listening.
Welcome, Mia.
Hello.
Welcome.
My comment is on the social skills of geeks nowadays. I go to Worcester Polytech for 2 years, and I find that a lot of geeks have trouble interacting with people, especially females, and they're seen as this elite group of people with independent ideas, but they'll often have trouble communicating their ideas, and I find a lot of difficulty communicating with them.
How do you address them? What have you learned about sort of approaching a geek?
I've learned to be patient. As a female, like, I hate doing this, but a lot often I find myself going, well, you know, if you could just explain that to me because you're so smart, and they find a lot of respect for that because I don't know much about computers, and they that's their forte. That's what they want to tell me about.
But if only, you know, if only you understood how much they want to know you, Mia.
But often I get, they won't lock eyes with me. They look down. They see me as a different type of person, even though I'm not really one of the popular crowd myself.
Yeah, this is very familiar.
Build a bridge here, John.
This is very familiar to me. I think you also, I think you have a very good understanding, though, of the culture. I think two things are important to understand with some of these kids, and of course there are certainly many socially acclimated and very popular geeks, but a lot of these kids really grew up in schools that did not value what they do. They went through a lot of abuse by their peers. They were set upon by other social groups. So they grew up kind of apart and uncomfortable. I don't think they often had a chance. And I don't think a lot of them really want to be insiders or really are interested in being popular conventionally. I think an interest in technology is certainly one way to connect with them. And I think patience is another, because I think they really do want to connect with people. And I guess I would urge you to give it some time. But it does require, I think, the way I learned to be close with Jesse was first when the shared talk about technology, and then also I saw over time he got much more comfortable with me.
Do they want to hear, as Mia said, how smart they are, or do they want to hear how potentially charming?
I think there's a little bit of arrogance in the culture, in the sense that there's a little bit of sort of payback now, because they had such a rough time that they now know something. They do know more than us about this stuff. They just do. And it's they can be arrogant about that. They can be a little rough on people who they perceive as not knowing as much as they do, and including people like me.
1-800-423-8255. Thank you, Mia. The Geek Connection. Jared is on the line.
Hi, yeah. I just wanted to say that I felt a connection here. I consider myself in the oxymoronic category of, like, a geek that's also jockish, kind of, like, more popular than a geek kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
How old are you, Jared?
I'm 20. I'm actually waiting to go into my C++ at Indiana State.
Interesting.
So I've been working on computers since I was like 10 years old. My dad was working for Digital and Prime before, a long time ago. The only thing that I disagreed with was that I find a lot of the people that find that, you know, that speak, that talk the talk, and, you know all this stuff, don't have as much trouble in the social situations that I have met, at least.
Where have you had trouble?
Well, I don't find that I have trouble. I mean, I've been going out with my fiance for 4.5 years, and I've never had trouble in that area. And I don't know. I've just never really met any of those really, really geeky people that I thought were really, really, really geeky. You know, even the people that were really smart and knew a lot about computers, I never thought of them as geeky. I just thought of them one of the guys or something.
That speaks well of you. So, you know, one of the places I write now on the web is slash.org. I don't know if you're on that, but it's sort of an open source free software center, which is a movement that really interests me. And there's a lot of sort of, you know, intense passion for technology, a lot of hostility, a lot of discussion of this stuff on that site. But I think in your experience, it sounds like at your school, I'm sure there are some people who fit that definition of geeks, huh?
It's more like, because I'm so in the culture already, it doesn't even seem like weird to me or geeky.
Right. And it is becoming more mainstream. It's becoming a bigger deal.
Yeah, I think so. I also wanted to say that the people's parents have a lot of influence on this. I know that my dad, because he was, you know, in the computer industry, he was a programmer for a while, and now he's like a high-level manager at Compaq. That influenced my career choices and how I spent my free time, you know, using computers.
So you didn't have to fight. You didn't have to fight your parents.
Yeah, John Katz, Jared, thank you. The parents, in the case of your friend Jesse, were absent or a problem. Do we want to talk about the parent dimension?
Yeah, the parent thing is huge. When the book came out a couple weeks ago, I was in New York at the Linux World Expo, and this kid came up to me from Queens, and he asked me if he could get a book at a discount. He wanted to give it to his father. And I said, well, sure. Well, why? He said, Well, he's online 60 hours a week. He decided that he wanted to challenge both Microsoft and Linux. He wanted to write his own operating system, and he was working at that very hard. And obviously, an incredibly bright kid. His school had just ordered him into counseling as an internet obsessive. He was because he was not doing well in Spanish, and his father was freaking out because and one of the real motives.
This is the view of the internet that John Perry Barlow said last week on this program. He said, "It's the internet threat or menace."
Right, exactly. But these kids are doing something that parents should love. They have something they love. They have. I mean, yes, you have to moderate it and you have to watch it and you want to make sure they do other things too. But for a kid to have, and these kids tell me all the time, you know, if I were doing ballet, if I were playing the violin, if I were playing chess, if I were in sports, my parents would approve of me. My teachers would love me. I'd be popular in school. But if I'm working on this incredibly complicated, rich, and difficult operating system or code or program or game, then I'm a weirdo and I'm a freak. Or since Columbine, maybe I'm even a murderer. And that's a tough situation for kids to be in. I think this, you know, schools really need to tap into this passion and bring it into the mainstream. And these kids are being pushed to the margins. They shouldn't really be growing up outside of the consciousness of their parents. And in a world where media in particular is sort of these nightmarish phobic portrayals of their lives, it's just crazy.
Connection listeners, it's time to take a geek to lunch, get to know a geek, or maybe for the geeks to come forth and define themselves as they do so beautifully in John Katz's book. The phone's 1-800-423-8255. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and PRI. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com. From Boston University. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the Geek Connection with John Katz, whose new book is called Geeks. It's about how two lost boys rode the internet out of Idaho, and we haven't even introduced Eric Twilligar, or however we pronounce that. But it's also more generally about the geek phenomenon and the kinds of people who are taking over the world in the era of nanotechnology. Geeks out there, define yourselves. Who are you? And how did you get there? And what about the rest of us? 1-800-423-8255 makes the geek connection. You just spoke, John Katz, of Columbine a year ago, and it's a sort of undertone in the whole book. What is the Columbine connection here?
Well, after the Columbine massacres, which were, of course, horrific, the media went on I called it a wave of geek profiling. 60 Minutes did a big hour on our video games, turning your kids into killers. I had a personal encounter with this one that I found that all of my columns on the web were archived on these kids' website, the kids who did the killing. They'd had a section of all of my work on the Trenchcoat Mafia website, which is the run they ran. And I don't know why. I know I still don't know why. I probably never will know why. This became a device. It really sent a lot of shockwaves to the geek culture because 81% of all Americans, according to a Gallup poll, believe the internet was responsible for that massacre. And I think this is so demonstrably false and unfair. But it really ratcheted up the whole idea that these kids, who are basically operating out of the consciousness of most adults anyway, were going to be turned into killers if they spent a lot of time online or a lot of time gaming. The Columbine kids were big players of doom. They identified themselves as geeks. Mm. They were working in the Linux operating. They were running the school's computer system. So there became this sort of wave.
They had a notion of us against them.
Well, they particularly had a bitter notion about them versus jocks. You know, there's these graffitis. One of them is reprinted in the book that popped up on walls all over the country. This one said it's about jocks picking on geeks. There was this undercurrent in terms of who they went after. They were particularly targeting people they thought had persecuted them. And that came out in the later videotapes, too. It sort of unleashed a wave of misery on not only geek kids, but on almost any kid in school who is different. Goths, Wiccans, people who wear black, people who wear white makeup, people who like industrial music. It became these educators who were panicked and parents who were nervous. began taking any kid who sort of wasn't conventionally normal and seeing them as a menace. They were ordered into counseling. They were sent home. They were ordered to change their clothes. And I wrote a column about this. I started getting an email called Voices from the Hellmouth, in which I said that the price of being different in America had really gone up. This website began to crash for days and days and days. It was, I don't know how many thousands of messages I got. And it became a very painful personal thing for me because it was like a river of pain. It was like I had an IV of misery going through into my arm. And Jesse really helped me with this because he talked about his own anger in school, about the humiliation, the being diminished, the being harassed, abused, pushed around. Teachers didn't know what you were doing. They treated you as a freak. And he talked very eloquently about how disconnected you can get in school if you're not in the mainstream, which he was not, and how angry you can get. And he said he could never imagine killing anybody, but he could understand how other people could get that idea in their head. And he was lucky because a teacher sort of stepped in, formed a geek club, and pulled him back. And he also then called me one night, one of the few times he's there. He doesn't use the phone. He's on ICQ channel. And he said, "Katz, you got to stop writing about this." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Because it's going to take you over." He said, "There's, you know, there's no end to it. You'll never stop. You'll never get out of it." And I did, because I was not able to stop myself. I couldn't. I was identifying so powerfully with this. I called it this river of pain that was coming out of there. And it's where he also became a good friend to me. You know, and he has that kind of intellectual confidence. You know, the age difference doesn't it bother him at all. He said, "You just got to stop. You got to stop doing it." He said, "It's getting you." And I don't even know how he knew that. You know.
So John Katz wrote another book and moved on. It's called Geeks, and it defines a moment, not only in our technology but in our culture. 1-800-423-8255. Geeks out there, who are you? 1-800-423-TALK. Amy is on a car phone.
Good morning. Thank you. I love your show.
Thank you, Amy.
I just wanted to say that I have a 13-year-old blooming geek, and this conversation has really helped me to, I think, better appreciate the kind of pain that he's feeling and some of what's going on in his life. And I have to go out and buy the book, and I think we have to read it, and his father has to read it as well.
Tell us about the boy.
Well, he's, you know, very smart, but having some hard times in school, doesn't want to have to do the work, doesn't feel that he's understood, you know, has a lot of friends, is very social and open, however, doesn't feel like anybody thinks the big thoughts that he does or that he can sort of communicate with and have the grand ideas with, and feels isolated that way. Has a lot of trouble producing homework. He says, if I can do the work in class and ace my test, why do I have to do all of this extra work?
And Amy, I bet he finds school boring compared to his life online, doesn't he?
That's exactly it. And it's created a lot of family stress and a lot of parental stress. And I think that this at least gives me a picture of what he's experiencing. And I think even good school systems like Brookline don't know how to. How to feed the creative beauty of these kids.
This is a great call because, you know, one of my motives in writing the book, I mean, geeks understand themselves, but other people don't understand them. And I was really hoping mostly to reach parents at these signings I've been doing. The most interesting part is kids showing up with their parents and they want them to read the book. They want to explain that they're in these amazingly rich, interactive, and free environments much of their lives. They have to go into schools, which is static, passive, non-technological, and they are not valued. They don't know how to communicate to their parents that what they're doing is not only healthy and important, but it's going to benefit them enormously through the 21st century. I mean, your son is going to do well, and he's going to have options. He's going to have opportunities.
That's what I keep telling him, that we didn't bring him up to be a drone and that he's going to find his place in the world, but that he has to try to figure out how to play the game in the meantime. And that's a really difficult thing for a kid to learn, and this has helped me greatly, and I'll make my husband read it as
well. Amy, just quickly, where does he go online?
You know something? I'll be honest. I don't know. He chats,
just
and he has
name.
A lot of friends. His a very, very dear friend is an 18-year-old woman who he communicates with. Knows his age. They're very open about that. He designs websites. He's into the Nine Inch Nails, and he just is working on a Nine Inch Nails website.
You don't have to worry about this kid. He's gonna take good care of you, and he's lucky to have you also. You know, Amy, I'd love to read in your honor an email. It was short that I got it during the Hellmouth thing, and it came from a self-described geek mother. My 6-year-old wonders why he isn't popular on the block, but does not enjoy racing his bike or playing soccer. He also wonders why no one else is reading the books he is. The online community did not exist when I was in high school, but geek culture did. Dungeons and Dragons and science fiction saved me. How many scared parents have taken the time to introduce their child to the items that kept them sane in high school? How many high school libraries are even allowed to stock Theodore Sturgeon or all of Robert Heinlein? Before we go to net culture, we need to face local culture. How many schools enforce a respect for all policy and enforce it fairly? I know that I have a budding geek for a son, and if I can get him sane through the next 13 years, there will be another decent adult on this planet.
Yes.
Do parents of geeks know each other? Is there a PTA for geeks?
Oh, I don't know, but I think I better go start one. I don't know. Kyle doesn't have any friends like him. So, you know, he keeps telling me he's a geek, and I keep telling him he isn't. And now I understand what he means when he says it, and that is what he's experiencing. And this is
maybe he just wants you to say you're a geek, Kyle, and we love you.
Well,
and
I'm
going
to go home and say that today. I thank you
and
very
also,
much.
And also, Tom the Geek is a very good thing to be at the moment.
Yeah, well, that is true.
He's one of a handful 13. Of people. He understands how the world works.
Yeah.
Amy,
yeah,
thank
I'm
you.
Gonna, I'm going to have him build me a website. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Amy.
Yeah, bye-bye.
1-800-423-8255, The Geek Connection. With the Boswell of the Geek Generation, John Katz, Ed is on the line.
Hey, good morning, Chris.
Welcome, Ed.
Good morning, John.
Good morning,
how are you?
Good, how are you?
Oh, my God, do I identify with that 13-year-old. I was there, and I know the pain. I know what it's like to absolutely hate your peers in high school because they're just clueless. And, you know, to just be so frustrated with school because you are incredibly bored to tears. And you get lost in sci-fi and get lost in computers. I did that entire routine. I know exactly where that kid is at. And the thing is, there are others like him. He just has to be given the free rein to reach out and find those others that are like him and be given the resources to go and learn and advance himself, because the school is going to do nothing but hold him back, very frankly. The teachers don't understand this technology. They're lost, and these kids are growing in ways. The thing is, I know this because I came out. I still work in data and telecom. That's my field now. And when I was going to school, you know, there wasn't any support for people who are different and really bright and very creative and who could put pieces together and see big picture stuff. And it's just amazingly frustrating until you're able to get past that stage and get into college and then get on with it. And I know I see amazing technological prowess in young employees, 16, 17, 18 years old, who are being scooped up right, left, and center by the people who are now my peers at, you know, in their early 30s, who are running companies or participating in ventures and doing this kind of thing, who say, oh, my God, I need this kid and I need that kid and I need programming talent and I need a code warrior and I need this, that, and the other. And, you know, we know where the resources are. You know, and we'll help to foster those kids. It's just.
Hey, did anyone help you? Did your parents? So, your parents
now,
support?
My father was traveling and amazingly busy in his job. He's got like 450 college credits. He's just incredibly bright. He's forgotten more than I'll ever know. But you know, he was busy, and my mother just didn't really understand where I was at emotionally and how much pain and frustration I was in.
And how much you love this stuff you were doing.
Oh, my God. And, yeah, I mean, my original Macintosh was number 000100.
Oh, wow. Right. You keep that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's long since gone to the recycling, but I should have kept it. But the bottom line is that these kids really need help. And I, as an older geek who can now straddle the fence because I've got a wife and a daughter and a house and doing the conventional sort of business thing, you know, but also who can understand the tech talk of these kids and know where they're at and appreciate how much talent they've got.
Ed, enormously to the point, if you had to sort of mark a transitional moment from, you know, from a geek misery to sort of self-acceptance, what was it?
I would like to say it was after I got out of high school and after I had maybe finished the second year of college. I'd really begun to connect with a few people and had begun to see the computer networks and begun to appreciate the technology and was starting to really use it because I had my own at that point and was doing some fun things with it and writing a little bit of code here and there and starting to accept myself and accept my own talents, my own interests, and not be worried about what I had already experienced and started to get emotionally past it. But it's a long, there's a lot of stress and there's a lot of hurt.
It's
and
tough. Kids like Ed should not have to hang on until they get to college. I mean, they should be recognized as the smart. I mean, they're one of the heroes and geeks of the book is Mike Brown, Jesse's high school teacher, who was the one teacher who did for him what nobody did for Ed. He formed a geek club. They were reading Catherine Dunn's novel, Geek Love, and the teacher said, I need to do something for these kids because Jesse was in a gang, he was on drugs, he was losing it. And they formed a geek club, and Jesse could get his three geek friends into the teacher's classroom every day and just talk about the net, talk about technology. It was the one place they could be safe, and the first thing Jesse did was keep everybody else out of the club. You know, nobody came in with shoes, nobody came in as a jock, nobody was a preppy. And he said it saved his life. As he put it, he said, I had a name to call myself. I had a way to identify myself. And I had a group I could finally belong to. This is just what Ed did not have and what it seems to me is a primary function of schools and parents to try to support.
1-800-423-8255. Thank you, Ed. Ellen is on the line.
Hello?
Hello, Ellen?
Yep.
Welcome.
Hi, I love the show.
Thank you.
I'm on my way out to get the book. What? I have a comment and two quick questions. One is, as I was working as a full-time print journalist during the Columbine shootings and was one of the reporters who was in Colorado, I want to let people know that one of the things that was reported along with the fact that these kids were obsessed with the Internet was that so many kids who were outcasts and not jocks in that school could remember those kids coming by the shooters to help them with their computer programming. They would occasionally reach out to the, I don't know what, so-called losers and try to, you know, share some of their knowledge. I'm not asking listeners to have, you know, sympathy with the Columbine shooters, but it seems to me that the Jesse in your book is acknowledging that he can imagine killing someone.
Oh, many kids emailed me and said they could picture him.
Right. So I'm wondering, do they give any credit at all to the fact that, let's say, he felt a barrier between you and he about not you not having a game kill? I mean, does he think that any of those computer games and the emphasis on knowing how to have a game kill, does he acknowledge that it lends itself to violence at all?
It's a great question. He does. You know, now that he's in college and he sees, he talks a lot about the need for him to have some space from this technology a little bit and develop intellectually in other ways. I mean, Jesse is so nonviolent a person. I mean, that he doesn't see the games as inducing violence. And I guess I have to say that I agree with him. I think, you know, as you know, because you were covering the Columbine story, these two kids had a lot of problems. They were on medication. There was a real streak of
they had a history of violence, right. Anyway, right?
And a history of mental difficulties. I think that the thing that that is very powerful. I mean, this is an emotional issue for me because I honestly think in my own life as a media critic, which began the day my father burst into my room in Providence, grabbed my buddy Holly Records, and hauled him off because the Providence Journal had reported that rock and roll caused symptoms like medieval fever. I started
rock and roll,
like
threat
media.
Or menace.
Threat or menace. And this is the problem is that the culture forces these kids into this defensive position that Ed is talking about, where they are constantly having to defend something that is astonishingly creative, affirming, and interesting. If schools and families would bring it into the middle, share it with them, ratify it, it would just be less charged. Parents would be less afraid. Believe me, this is not a violent culture. This is the group of people on the planet that is least likely to hurt you or anybody else. They love technology, they're doing creative stuff, and they should really be rewarded for it, I think.
And my other question is whether or not, as we identify them, and Manhattan calls them, you know, geek chic, and they get labeled and written about, can they retain their uniqueness? I mean...
Yeah. This is the other question. This is a great question, too. People ask all the time, well, is this culture going to mainstream? Are they going to rule the world? Can they remain individuals? I think they have no choice, really. I don't think this is a culture that knows how to mainstream, wants to mainstream. Like Ed and other people who've called, they've experienced this outsiderness so viscerally.
Okay.
Now, there are people, you know, I love to talk about Bill Gates in this regard because he, of course, was a geek at one point. And yet, there's something biblical about him. To me, he is still a perpetual outsider. He's got $50 billion. He's fighting with the government. He's trying to hire all these lobbyists and lawyers to figure out how, and he can't quite get inside. for all of the billions. He's just not made it inside. So I hope they don't. I think they're also, these kids are the last thing between us and this sort of rampaging corporatism that's engulfing and devouring media. And I hope they fight on.
1-800-423-8255. Thank you, Ellen. Jay is on the line.
Good morning.
Welcome, Jay.
I wanted to bring the conversation back to Columbine just for a second. I'm 26 now. I graduated from Brookline High School. And I could have been one of those kids. I really understand exactly why they did what they did, and it was terrifying for me to see that because I just sat down and said, my God, that would have been me.
What kind of abuse were you taking?
We were pushed around every day. I was in fights in the halls. The jocks were basically allowed to do whatever they wanted to us, and we had to sort it out amongst ourselves. Those of us that had any kind of an intellectual gift were just completely outcast, and the jocks were the important kids because they had the football games and the pep rallies, and because we didn't want to take a part in that because they would call us any name they could think of. I mean, you know, homophobia, anything they could come up with, and they were allowed to get away with it, and you just get so angry because the school isn't behind you.
You know, if this could happen to Jay at a school like Brookline in Massachusetts, imagine what life is like in most schools in America. You know, that's I got a letter, an email from a kid in Boston. I'll just read a bit of it. Peter in Boston, and I'm still in touch with him. I am a geek and very proud of it. I am beaten, spit on, pushed, and jeered at. Food is thrown at me while teachers pretend not to see. People trip me. Jocks knock me down in the hallway. They steal my notes, call me a geek and a fag and a freak, and tear up my books. They cut my shirt and rip it. Mostly, I honestly think this is because I'm smarter than they are, and they hate that.
Jay, does that sound familiar?
I just think it's... they're scared of us because they know we can think circles around them, which sounds arrogant, but that was sort of the story of my entire school existence, I guess. And I've just been seeing it from the time I was in third grade to graduating high school.
Where are you now, Jay?
I'm in AR Mass now. I'm a landscape contractor and an emergency medical technician. I have a one-year-old daughter, and I'm married to a geek. So it's sort of perpetuating the story, I guess.
Jay, I'm so glad you called. You're wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you. 1-800-423-TALK makes the geek connection. Rachel is on the line.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Don.
Hey, good morning.
Welcome, Rachel.
I guess we just heard from a girl geek, so to speak, but I wanted to...
That was a boy geek.
I'm sorry. I just heard the end of it. I want to ask a couple questions about this whole geek notion. First, where are the girls in all of this? Second, why did
Jay said he married a girl geek.
Sorry? Yes, that's right. But I mean, this whole discussion today has been about guys. So are there girls, and how do they fit into this whole cultural type?
Where do you put yourself on a geek scale, Rachel?
Oh, I'm a girl geek all the way.
All right, so you know they're out there. You have...
I have a second part of the question is, why is there this kind of connection between technological proficiency and love for D&D and science fiction? It seems to happen a lot in this cultural type, but not be a necessary link. And third, we seem to love to love geeks right now, in part because they're going to grow up and make a lot of money. I think we should just remember, I don't know, keep that in mind in the whole discussion.
Rachel, thank you. John Katz, how many questions can you answer in 1 minute?
Well, there's a huge connection between geeks and science fiction. Girl geeks are pouring onto the Internet. They're all over the place. But remember, the net was initially sort of came out of institutions that were overwhelmingly male-dominated, the Defense Department, Engineering, and Science. In the recent, now more women are buying computers than men. There are definitely, I think, more male geeks than girl geeks. But girl geeks, I'm hearing from them all the time. I think they're definitely moving onto the web, for sure.
How many of Rachel's three questions did you answer?
I think two. I'm not sure I remember the third one. But.
Rachel, thank you.
Thank you.
John Katz, thank you. We admire you, John, and we want you to come back every time you have a semi-serious thought. Incidentally, connectioners, you can reach John Katz online at John Katz, J-O-N-K-A-T-Z, one word, /.com.
.org.
.org. I beg your pardon. Our website is theconnection.org. Thanks to all the geeks for bearing with us and calling in. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston.
funding for The Connection comes from the listeners at WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
PRI, Public Radio International.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Coming up on Here and Now, all the latest news, plus a look at electric deregulation in New England, and also a personal financial advisor with advice on getting the best banking deals in town.